All right, welcome back to the show. Another week, another podcast, another episode here of Nashville Talks with Taylor Jones. And man, thank you guys so much for including me in your podcast queue and pushing a download button or subscribe button or whatever it is that you do to make this show appear on your device every time I put one out. I can't really say every week anymore because I missed a few weeks recently, but every time I put one out, so you'll get it as quick as I get it out there. You know, it's like the bill collectors. You'll get it when I get it. It's one of those things. So, man, it's a rainy day in Nashville today as we record this. And the traffic is at, you know what I'm saying, an all-time high. Anytime it rains in Nashville, the traffic gets worse. But we made it to the old recording studio here to do this thing. And man, as we speak, it's the producer's birthday. He's not here today, but it's his birthday, May 4th. Happy birthday, Ian. We miss you. Thank you for mixing down the show for us every week and making it sound good, making it loud enough where you can hear it over your lawnmower if you got headphones on. You know what I'm saying? Podcast ain't no good if you can't hear it over your lawnmower. That's rule number one. So I've had a few like that where I said, man, I wish they boosted levels. And usually it was mine. So once we got in, the levels were boosted. Bang, there you have it. That's my secret. Got to be able to hear it over lawnmower. So I don't know what's been going on here in my little world. Not a whole lot. Just me and Kyla just working and hanging out and doing our thing, running around in circles. Woo, I'm yawning. It's that time of day. It's nap time, man. So just working and carrying on. Just take my grandmother different places and doing what I do, man. Loving life, enjoying it. Oh, flag football season started back up the other day. So my squad is back in action, and it's our first season as a team with this particular team. And we're currently 1-2 as the season goes. So we got our first win yesterday or the day before, and now my leg hurts. I woke up the next day, my leg was hurting. My quad is all sore, so I'm trying to walk and not sell the limp there at all. But we'll kick out of it. We got a bye week coming up, so I got 2 weeks to get better. But yeah, so Bruno's playing. It's quite comical to see us out there. And but it was fun. So that's really the only thing new, you know what I'm saying? Dogs and cat and everybody's okay. So going from there. But today, as a guest, I have Mr. Taylor Alexander, who is making his second appearance on the show. He was on about a year ago, I guess, and whenever we first kindly started. And, man, his stories just went onward and upward from here, from there. He was just recently fresh off The Voice TV show, NBC, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's just got booted off of that, I guess, and this is his first time talking to the media. And he's talking to me, so.
That's true. This is the exclusive.
The exclusive. See, I got an exclusive, baby. We're going to do the voice expose within contracts. Contract reasoning here.
We're not doing an expose.
They got better lawyers than us, folks.
Yeah.
So we're going to just keep it in the contract. But we are going to talk about his personal journey since he's been on here last time. And, yeah, man, so. How you been doing, brother?
Man, I've been great. I was enjoying the weather until today. Mm-hmm. We had a couple real nice days, and then I woke up this morning with the rain, and it was kind of a little bit depressing. But
shoot, man, it's making that grass grow. I like it. It's keeping everything nice and green here in Nashville. You know, got to have it green for all of our people that are visiting, for all the bridesmaids.
Yeah, all the bachelorette parties.
Yeah, all them are coming in. They like to talk about how green everything is. That's for sure. Every time I pick them up, that's so green here. Oof. And it's what have our lives come to?
It's funny because that's kind of where like a big majority of my income is coming from right now is from bachelorette parties, playing downtown, and like having to entertain very drunk young ladies. I'm the one facilitating the drunkenness, and then yeah. You have to drive them home.
No, I don't drive them home. I drive them to the bar.
So, oh, okay.
I don't pick them up.
So you're just as much in on it as I am.
Yeah, I'm in on the top side. I don't want to have nobody when they're real drunk in my car. I get them from the airport and take them down to their little Airbnb or hotel and then go from there.
That's a good idea. That's probably way smarter, and you don't have to put plastic down.
I've heard some horror stories, so I don't want that. Oh, Lord, I got to quit yawning on a podcast. This podcast ain't ever going to win no award if I keep yawning.
They do podcast awards?
Yeah. Hopefully this one will win an award one day. You know what I'm saying? But not right now. Not as the shape that we're in.
Not that yawning.
All this yawning, I'm getting further and further away from an award. So when were we in here last? About a year ago, really?
Oh, man. Let's see. It's May. So, yeah, about a year ago. I think it might have been like last. It was last June because it was right after my record came out.
Was it really? Okay. Yeah. That's right. Well, that's smart of us. We would have done that right when the record came out. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's what we did.
Trying to move some records. How'd the record do for you, man?
It did okay. We ended up, we charted it on the Americana charts a little bit. It didn't go too terribly high, but what we figured out pretty quickly was that the Americana stations don't play, or the explanation that I was given is that they don't play EPs. They
really?
Only play full lengths.
Well, there's some news.
Yeah. So, you know, that would have been nice to know before I printed, you know, 100 CDs to send out to the radio stations, but so it goes.
Really? See, I would have never guessed that. I almost wonder if that ain't somebody just BSing. I don't know.
Well, I imagine if you have the right kind of connections, then they'll play anything,
right?
Just like anything else, but that's probably the official explanation, probably because they don't want to, you know, they need like a stock answer.
Yeah.
Because they're probably getting thousands of submissions every single week from
all
these people, so they got to gatekeep a little bit, I guess.
Maybe so. Well, I sure had a lot of fun making it.
Yeah, I did too, and I'd like to do another one. The next time I do one, it'll be full length.
Yeah.
Lord willing, that's what I really want to do. But
you got the songs written?
Yeah,
do
but
you?
It's just a matter of, you know, finding the place to do it and coming
that
up
whole
with
deal.
The money and yeah, it's a it's not as easy as it looks.
Not as easy as you make it.
It is a lot cheaper than it used to be, but it's still expensive for people like myself.
Yeah, I got you. Well, you just moved out of town into Goodlettsville, right?
Yeah,
how's that going?
It's all right so far. I got a little nice piece of land, not too much or anything, but it's kind of a little tucked away a little bit, which I've been really enjoying. Trying to get some chickens and vegetable garden stuff going and all that kind of stuff, but I hadn't even really been able to unpack all the boxes yet because we got in there and realized that there was a mouse problem in kitchen, which was a really nice surprise. So we're trying to mitigate the pest control right now before we can even really unpack dishes and stuff. So it's only been since Monday that we moved in there. So we'll see how that all turns out.
Yeah, well, I think you'll get it straightened out. Seems like a good fit for you.
Anyway. I do like it, though. It's real pretty. It's real quiet. And it's, you know, it only took me, without traffic, it only took me 25 minutes to get to your house
from there.
It's really not far at all. It was taking me almost 25 minutes to get from this side of town to the east side to play half the time. So
right.
It's, you know, for the distance and the price, you can't really beat it right now out in that area.
Well, cool, man. So, you're fresh off the TV thing. So, how did you ever get involved with all that, man? I know a lot of people saw you on the blind audition Sing and Cher, and you got to look at Adam Levine when he had to turn around to see you.
Yeah.
So, that was cool. He turned around. Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
So, tell me about that whole process. Like, how the heck did you ever get involved with that?
Man. So, I guess it kind of starts with, you know, my mom and my sister and people that had watched the show previously had been telling me for years that I needed to go audition, and I didn't really want to do the TV thing all that much. And this past, well, it would have been a year ago, like right now. It was like May of last year. I had a residency with a honky-tonk band playing like every Friday afternoon. We were doing like a honky-tonk happy hour thing. And I was fronting that, and we were mostly just singing old Merle Haggard stuff and Hank Williams and stuff like that, and just mostly just for tips, just for fun, because we wanted some place to play and kind of sharpen the chops with some guys that I've been playing with. And somebody came up to me at one of those gigs and just asked me if I'd ever thought about trying out for The Voice. And, you know, like, I've had a bunch of people that have asked, you know, people ask that all the time, because that's like the biggest music show on TV. It's one of the biggest shows on TV. And a lot of people that are into music or see that you're into music suggest that you ought to go try out. So I just assumed it was just another dude trying to be nice and, hey, man, you should really go try out. But he turned out to be like a scout, and he was like, man, I just happened to come in, and I really think that you should try out. And I was like, well, I'll think about it. And he was like, well, email me on Monday, and I really hope you'll do it. We can, you know, we'll let you play your guitar, and you just pick two songs and all this kind of stuff. And the auditions were going to be in Atlanta in, like, June or something like that. I don't exactly remember when it was. I think it was June. And my parents live in that general area around northeast from Atlanta. And so I was like, okay, what the heck? I can make a weekend trip, especially if I can get, like, a private audition, you know. And so I just, you know, thought about it and was – it took a little bit of convincing from some people, but I went and did it and ended up getting through that round and then several more. And, you know, it takes a couple trips back and forth to L.A. before they put you – or before they send you up for the blind auditions, in which we did in – oh, I don't even remember now, October or something, and did the blinds and was lucky enough to turn a chair, so I got to go back and film the battle rounds, and that's where I finished my tenure there.
So how many – here's a question I got for you. So because I know a lot of people are curious about that song selection.
Yeah.
So how did they choose that? Is this, was that your idea? Like, how the heck did you come up with that?
I think, generally speaking, the producers pick the songs that people sing, generally, is the impression I got. I suggested that song because it had been in my repertoire for, I mean, since probably 2012. I used to be in a regional kind of, what'd you call it, like alt country band called Young America back in the day. And we used to cover that song in our bar sets just because we thought, you know, like it was a really good one for when you feel like you're losing the crowd and you need, like, you need something that'll, like, really catch their attention as soon as you get to the chorus and kind of make people talk and look around. And so I'd been doing that song for like 5 or 6 years. And I suggested it for one of my preliminary auditions, and the producers really, really liked it, and so they wanted me to do it for the blinds. And so I actually ended up getting to use my arrangement of the song for the blinds, which I don't think a lot of people got to do, so I felt real lucky to get to use that.
Well, slick, bro. I think that was a stroke of genius if I ever did see it, because I really don't know how they decide, you know, whatever, to turn around or whatnot. But you really struck a nerve with Adam with it, because, like, he obviously figured it out real quick, like, which song it was. And I really think he respected you from word go for doing that.
Yeah, it seemed like it struck a nerve with him, just because it was probably pretty risky just to have, like, I sound like a traditional country singer, and so it's kind of risky to not sing something really in your wheelhouse, especially the first time that you're presenting yourself to a big audience like that. But I just figured that it was, at the very least, it would get people talking and would show that, you know, I can do more than just sing cover songs of a genre that I'm supposed to fall into, you know. I didn't want to just kind of karaoke sing my way through something, and I thought bring something at least interesting, you know, to the table. Because the fact of the matter is, you know, I'm a baritone singer. I'm not flashy. I don't do vocal runs. I just kind of like to do the George Jones thing and just sing the song, you know, and be on pitch and all that kind of stuff, but sing the song for what it is. And so I knew that I was going to be up against a lot of people that could do vocal gymnastics around me like nobody's business. And if I were to try to compete with that, I'd fall on my face because it's not within my range, my vocal range, to even do those sorts of things. So I figured that the best strategy was to do something that was just totally off the wall and unexpected.
Well, I think you, man, it's one of those things where, like, you know, in entertainment, you know, there's all these kind of situations where you can stand up to the plate, take a pitch, and then swing. And if you hit it, you know, there's singles, there's doubles, there's triples, and there's home runs, you know. And yeah, there's also striking out.
Yeah, there's whiffing.
And getting hit in the head with the ball.
Oh, yeah.
There's all kinds of, you know, when you're standing up there, you know, everything kind of has like there's like a scale of how successful an experiment goes off or whatever. But from where I was sitting watching that, to me, that was a home run. Because, one, like, I've known you for a few years. I never would have expected that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but then when I took it in and I go, this is a stroke of genius. Because you crossed over and you killed so many stereotypes in one swoop. Like, first of all, when you stand up there, everybody who knows you goes, oh, I hope Blake turns around.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, that's like, you know, just because of being Nashville and country, whatever.
Sure.
But you were somehow able to make probably the guy who I would have considered least likely to turn around to really get his attention. You know what I mean? Because I've seen, you know, some of the women on there on that show they'll hear a country and they'll turn around or whatever. But
sure, yeah, yeah.
Adam, like, kind of knows what he's listening for. You know what I mean? And he's been on there pretty much just about every season or whatever.
I think he has been.
You know,
yeah,
him and Blake. And
the whole
so
time.
All that to say, for him to turn around, it was like, dude, it really must have got him for him to do that. And I just think the fact that you went out there and you presented this crazy idea and it worked. Like, that had to feel good.
It did feel good. By the time that I got up there to do it, you know, you've been rehearsing this song. You know, by that point, I'd been in L.A. for, like, almost 4 weeks, I think. Like, we were out there almost literally the entire month of October, pretty much. Shy of, like, a week or something. I think I got there October 1st or 2nd and was there till the 20-something. I feel like it might not have been that long, but it feels like it was definitely at least 3 weeks. And kind of just rehearsing that song into the ground, mostly by myself. You do get a few band rehearsals and vocal help and stuff like that, but just hammering that song into the ground so many times that by the time you get ready to step up there and do it, I was just like, all right, I'm kind of not ready to go home but I'm ready to sing the song, you know. I'm ready to see if this is gonna land or not. I've been speculating and like driving myself crazy for 3 weeks in a hotel room, you know. So I was super excited, and it did feel like a huge payoff for a lot of work to see it well received the way that it was.
So, how did your social media react? Because basically, you go from, you know, not unknown, but close to unknown, to be TV exposure to millions, and a lot of people liked it. So what happens, because I've often wondered what it's like, you know, to go from just a guy to, like, boom, all this attention, and then what would that do to, like, your Twitter and your Instagram and all that stuff? Like, what happened after that? What was that night like when that show aired?
I wasn't really prepared for that. Obviously, my phone was blowing up. I was just, you know, texts from, you know, all the friends you didn't know you had. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, a lot of people just, congratulations, that was awesome. We're watching from here, which was super cool to see, but I was so stressed out getting a million things, and like, I wanted to respond to everybody, and, you know. But then, like, yeah, the social media blows up, and people find your personal page, like, on Facebook, and want to add you as a friend and message you nice things, and which was really cool, and it was a little overwhelming at first because I'm not particularly well-versed in the whole social media thing. I mean, I can hardly keep up with, like, Facebook to me seems really new, and, like, I remember when, you know, and I'm not, like, a dinosaur here or anything, but I'm just saying, I remember when MySpace was really new, and everybody was starting to do that, and especially integrate, you know, eventually bands had MySpace pages and all this kind of stuff, and, like, that's, like, my wheelhouse, I remember that stuff, and so, like, when everything switched over to Facebook, like, I just kind of, I can't figure it out anymore, all the algorithms, and, like, what stuff, you know, gets seen by your fans and what doesn't, like, it's all over my head, and so I was a little overwhelmed with, like, how many, you know, who I'm responding, you know, all the people I'm responding to and all this different ways that I'm supposed to, you know, reach out to people, and but it was really cool. It was all positive, mostly. I got a couple of negative reviews, which were actually my favorite, because especially on YouTube, is because people, you know, it's just like unmitigated, just, I don't know what the word is really.
Unqualified.
Well, yeah, it's just like armchair music critics, you know, but you get some of those that are like trying to use a lot of technical language about music, and it's like, dude, like, and they're using words out of context. So they don't really know what they're talking, you know, that kind of stuff's really funny. But the best ones are where they don't even offer any sort of explanation or thought process. They just leave like a short, like, my favorite one was just commented on the on the video, "You suck," and that was it. "You suck," and that was so funny because I can't imagine, like, I've been playing music for, like, well, try, you know, playing my own songs on stage for 10 years. I'm 25, and I started playing out when I was 14 or 15 of songs that I made up, you know, and I've had hecklers and I've had all this stuff, but, like, it's different. Like it'd be a lot harder if I was, like, if I was just playing on stage and somebody just walked up and was like, "Dude, you suck," like, right to your face, and it'd be hilarious, and no one would ever do it. Like, no. Occasionally you'll have somebody in the back that'll yell something like, you know, I can't even remember. I've never even really been, like, heckled. I've just had people that are, like, disruptive, you know, that, you know, feel like you're kind of encroaching on their bar space or whatever, which is probably fair, if you're, like, mm-hmm. if you're a regular at a bar and, like, some crappy 17-year-old band just sets up and starts playing out of tune, like, I'd be pissed off too. So, but yeah, that just struck me, like, that whole social media interaction just struck me as super weird because I don't really interact with it all that much, and then when you're kind of forced to interact with it and, like, be a part of social media in that big of a way, you realize how much differently we treat one another when, mm-hmm. When we're not, even when we are using our real name in our photograph, like on Facebook, you still get really creepy stuff, from people that will message you really inappropriate stuff or like all kinds of weird stuff. But I, yeah, as far as you know, I kind of forget that, you know, for anybody that's curious, like, how much the numbers went up from being on two episodes of the show. Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook all consistently went up about 1,000 likes each. That was about where everything ended up landing, was about 1,000 follows or likes each for those two episodes. I imagine, you know, like, friends of mine that are still on now, they're kind of, I don't know if they're doing 1,000 a week or whatever, but they're definitely continuing to grow, so the, you know, that that increased amount of time for exposure is definitely a working model that exists for those people for sure.
I got you. So you do the two episodes, and you know, I didn't see the second one, so I don't know how, if they tell you how they wrap you up or whatever. But how do they, when you know you're finished up, how does that go down? And how do you sort of move out of that LA thing? And we'll talk about being trapped in a hotel for a month here in a minute. But
yeah, sure. I'm trying to. Oh, so, well, I have to think of the stuff that I'm allowed to talk about and what I'm not. When we were doing when we were doing interviews, like, on the show, like, they have, like, really strict guidelines of, like, you know, you can't say this, you can't say, but I don't really know. Basically, like, the first thing that happens when you get cut is they send you to a counselor to make sure you're okay. And
really? Who freaking knew that?
Yeah. That's probably common knowledge, but
I didn't know that.
But that, which was cool. I've been in the music industry for a long, well, it's hard to say that I've been in the music industry. I've been like clawing from the bottom of the music industry for a long time. So disappointment is kind of like my default state when it comes to
music,
understand this. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Like you've probably sat, and I know I have, across the desk from enough guys that are promising you the world or have the answer to, you know, everything that you've ever wanted out of the industry right in front of you, and all you have to do is, you know, their steps or whatever, right? So none of it all ever works out. You know, I mean, not ever, but I mean that, you know, it doesn't work until it does, right? So
exactly.
I've been disappointed a whole lot of times. So I wasn't, like, distraught or anything. I was like, all right, well, I felt like I did a really good job, and I practiced super hard the whole time, so I wasn't really disappointed in myself at all. It would have been fun to stay out there longer and get to do some more songs and stuff, but my whole goal for the thing was just to challenge myself and just feel like I did my best, and I definitely feel like I did, so I wasn't particularly disappointed with the whole thing. I mean, at the end of the day, you can't control the outcome of things like this. You can only control how much work you're willing to put into it, and you know, that's pretty much how the music industry is. Like, you could be the greatest songwriter of all time and have the best voice ever, and if you're not out there hoofing it, no one's ever going to hear songs and no one's going to care, and you're going to stay in your basement playing the best songs ever written, you know, and no one will ever know. So, you got to be out there hustling just constantly. And once you've done that long enough, then disappointment doesn't really hit nearly as hard. It's just kind of like, on to the next thing, you know.
So. I got you. So tell me about the lockdown LA hotel life.
Yeah. So, well, you get a roommate, which it worked out well for me. I was roommates the second time with this dude, Hunter, who's still on, Hunter Plake. He's great. Really cool dude. We got along super well. And, mostly we're just kind of in our room to, like, you know, shower and change and sleep. During the day, you know, you can kind of walk around a little bit, and you have like a radius that you're allowed to walk in outside of the hotel. And so I'd walk over to the convenience store or over to one of the restaurants across the street or something and get a bite to eat if I was getting like stir crazy. But for the most part, you're like at the hotel or getting shuttled to various places to shoot stuff, you know, or do rehearsals or whatever. So it was just a lot of rehearsing, a lot of, you know, wardrobe fittings and makeup and, I mean, all that kind of stuff. But it was really cool. I got really used to that way of life because I did, you know, probably 6 or 8 weeks in total of something similar to that, where, you know, you have like a defined schedule, like this is what you're doing today and this is where you have downtime. So if you're going to rehearse, do it now, or, you know, this is when you're going to have a few hours to go grab a bite or whatever. I got kind of used to that. So when I got back home, I was kind of like, wait, okay, so I can, what do I do? You know, I actually like really liked that rigid scheduling. It made my life feel really purposeful, you know?
Right.
When I have to make my own schedule, a lot of times stuff just goes out the window. But, you know, so it goes.
So, I guess. So tell me about the band on The Voice. Like, are they just ridiculous?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, okay. So the funny thing about this was, I got into one of the first rehearsals with the band to do that Cher tune. And we were like kind of basically woodshedding the song to kind of see where everybody was going to sit. And I you know, got my guitar plugged in and just said to the band, and I wasn't like, I don't mean for this to like sound condescending or anything, but, and I just kind of said to the band, I was like, so here's kind of what I do is, you know, I'll do like, start, you know, in the verse, we go down to this, you know, we're going to go to the three minor chord here, it blah, blah, blah. And the band leader was like, oh, we know. And I was like, oh, sorry, I wasn't, like, trying to, like, big league you or anything. And he goes, oh, no. He goes, dude, we've played, like, he goes, three of us have played this song hundreds of times. And I was like, oh, okay, great. He goes, yeah, we used to be Cher's band. And I was like, okay, then I don't have to tell you guys anything. Sorry. You know, I just, you know, because I did, you know, a lot of times you walk into a rehearsal and my go-to response is, I've got a chart. Here's a chart, everybody. This is what we're doing. But they're like, mm-hmm. dude, We got it, you know. And those guys are ridiculous players. They can play. That's what's so cool. That was my favorite thing about the whole show. Really, was how much diversity in, like you get to hear with the band. And like we would go in when we were doing the rehearsals for the battles, and like, you know, we were doing a Garth Brooks and Billy Joel tune, and they would kill that. And then somebody would walk in and do like an R&B thing with tons of, like, you know, I don't even know what the sounds are called, but they can play all these different styles flawlessly at the drop of a hat, and that must be a really fun gig to have, I bet.
Absolutely.
But you have to, I mean, those guys are some of the, I mean, probably those guys are, like, the best guys I've ever played with. I mean, in most ways, they're like the lifeblood of that show. They're so cool, and they're really, you know, chill and professional, but just, yeah, they're ridiculously good.
Well, slick, man. I know that's like a dream to play with guys like that, man. And
yeah,
and I don't, again, like going back, like you said, the diversity of being able to play all the different styles, and well, they have to.
Oh yeah.
Cause you never know what the next singer is going to pull up or whatever. And you gotta be prepared for everything. So they're just beasts. Those
yeah,
cats.
Like they have one dude that plays keys, and he'll do a lot of like the auxiliary stuff. Like on my stuff, he was playing fiddle. You
really?
Know? Yeah,
that's not just an instrument people just have in the back.
Yeah, but like he can play a fiddle line on the keys that sounds like not only now with the technology, it literally sounds like a fiddle, but he knows exactly what a fiddle player would play in a country song. And he can do that, and then he can jump on and do, you know, the B3 or something that would be perfect for something like those guys just have such good taste, like they make really good decisions, which is cool because you know you can sit up there with a keyboard that has a million sounds on it and play crappy parts, you know, but those
yeah,
guys
of course.
Play just flawless, great choices constantly. Mm-hmm. It was so cool.
Yeah, I wish I should probably watch that show more just for that, but
yeah,
you know, it's because that band is sick. American Idol band the same way. I mean, just
I think a couple of those guys might have played in the Idol band.
Probably did.
If I heard correctly, but I don't know.
Probably did, man.
Yeah.
Like you said, best of the best of the best.
Oh, man.
So you get done, you come back home, and now what? What has been has anything changed in your life since
well,
then, or has it just been basically more of the same?
It's more of the same. I like to tell this story because I think it's hilarious. But so on the show, they had me wearing a cowboy hat, which belongs to me. Well, someone gave it to me at a show, actually. I was playing a show in Wisconsin, and this dude that I actually knew from Nashville originally was a songwriter, and he had since relocated back up to Wisconsin, and he wasn't getting any use out of the hat, and so, you know, we were hanging out playing, and he asked me if I wanted a hat, and I was like, yeah, sure, and when he gave it to me, it was like totally, like, the hats come like flat build, and so I took a steam teapot to it and like shaped it into that, you know, the cowboy brim style, but so the hat belongs to me, but I don't always wear it all the time, like I'm not wearing one now. Occasionally I'll wear them at shows, it just kind of depends, but that kind of became like a de facto trademark because they, you know, they had me in it in the show, which was probably a really good stylistic choice. But now I find, and this is, to me, this is really funny, but like when I'm playing, you know, my gigs downtown or whatever, and I intentionally have experimented with this just to see. So on a couple gigs, I didn't wear my hat, and I would mostly get through the entire show and nobody would say anything to me, really, more so than they normally would. Like, oh man, great job, or, you know, thanks for playing my request or whatever. But if I wear the hat, I almost always have like two or three people that were like, hey, you were just on The Voice, which is really funny. So my joke is now that, like, as long as I don't, like, if I don't wear the hat, then I can be totally anonymous, you know.
Isn't that crazy?
That's the biggest change is occasionally getting recognized on the street or something. But other than that, it's still just back to the hustle, man. I mean, the fact is classic country music is making a comeback, but it doesn't have a huge, well, people will tell you it doesn't have a huge wide appeal, and so it's going to be an uphill battle if you want to write and sing your own songs in that style,
mm-hmm.
Which is something that I had to come to terms with a long time ago. So I think for people that want to do things the old-fashioned way, it's just going to be a lot of hustling regardless. I think it has helped to an extent. It kind of gives you that little extra push of, like, legitimacy, especially for, like, your press kit and stuff like that that you send out. But, I mean, the funny thing is just to be totally candid about it, is, you know, I haven't had any more people answering my emails than I had previously. That's not so much of a complaint insofar as it's just it's just been my experience with probably how many booking agents just get totally bogged down with emails so many times that they don't see stuff like that, or, you know, it's the industry is just, I think really, what's the word? Inundated with a lot of stuff right now. So it's kind of hard, but it does give you a little bit of extra legitimacy, and you know, that's about it. You know,
I got you.
I don't mean to sound negative or anything, because it was a very positive experience that I'm super grateful for. I'm just trying to be realistic for people that are listening, that are maybe in the industry or aspiring or whatever, you know.
Well, I would think that the default way of thinking would be like, oh, he's on The Voice. I bet business picked up huge.
Yeah. I mean, a few more people have come out to see me when I go back home and play. They're real excited to come out and see. And I imagine if I go to other cities, it'll be the same thing. In Nashville, it's kind of like, you know, oh, you're on The Voice. Yeah, so is like my neighbor and my Uber driver and my bartender and my barista.
Exactly.
You know, because, you know, a lot of people that are on The Voice congregate here a lot of times after the show. Like, I know a couple people that were on my season that are relocating here. It's just like, this is the place to be for music.
Yeah, it is.
Unless you want to be out in LA. And, you know, I don't know a lot of country singers that want to relocate out to LA just because it can be a little expensive. I mean, it's getting expensive here, but you can still do the working class musician thing here if you really put your nose to the grindstone. So there's, you know, a lot of Voice alumni here. So that, you know, here it's almost more like old news, you know?
Right.
But, you know, in other places it's really cool and people really, you know, respond positively to that. So definitely back home. I mean, the hometown fan base, kind of swelled a lot over the course of that and had some of that hometown pride stuff, which I really appreciated, and had a few really good shows back there after I got off of the show. But you know, it's just, you know, I think that in independent music, you know, you never finish paying your dues.
Mm-hmm.
To one extent or another. I think that it's always gonna be a little bit, you know, not necessarily feast or famine all the time, but it's always going to be something that you have to work hard at, because frankly, we don't have the money to pay people, like, to delegate the responsibilities out. So it's always going to be a hustle, and I appreciate the hustle. I'm one of those kinds of people that I kind of go crazy and get into a bad headspace when I don't have things going on, and when I don't feel like I'm pushing. I can't stand to be alone at the house and not be sending emails, or like, you know, like I can't just like take a day off a lot of times, which is something I've been teaching myself to turn the phone off one day and just chill. Like, you don't have to drive yourself crazy, but I like the hustle, and I think that it's noble to continue with it.
So, right. So
I guess that's my dissertation on,
I got you,
all that.
So, like, okay, I'll just shoot a little smoke, and then I'll come with a question. But
sure,
man, I think you're as real of a singer and an artist for what in what you do. Like, if everybody's, you know, categorized one way or the other, genre or whatever, or, you know, for what you do, you're one of the best, you know, in my opinion.
You.
And, like, that's just my opinion. And, you know, what I like is I like the realness of it, that this is actually who you are.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't, like, something that you see as, well, this is a hot trend, so I'm going to do it. Like, you were doing this before it was a hot trend.
Yeah.
And that's legit. I mean, your track record speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, all that to say, man, like, if I had the power and I was a freaking guy, okay, I would see you as a layup, and because I'm like, dude, this kid, he has a look, he has a sound. I mean, what, sign him up, let's get going. I mean, I would have a single out on you in 6 months. You know what I mean? Mm. Now, all that being said, so I'm like a fan of yours, and somebody with, I have a little bit of experience, like you said, navigating the industry.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever, clawing at the bottom. I like that. That's us, right?
Yeah.
But so that means we've watched a lot. We've seen a lot of stuff come and go, and we've, you know, seen what works. And so I'm saying that from the perspective of going, like, I think this could work in a minute. So in your mind, do you have, like, what's your patience level? What's your frustration level? What's your, you know, your level at this point with, because, like, I feel like I live in this place of going, like, huh, okay, I think I'm at a certain level with what I do, and I see other people doing what I do, and I think they're at a similar level at what I do, but, like, at what point do I feel like I suck, or I'm not qualified to do this,
yeah,
or at what point do I feel like giving up, at what point do, you know, and then it always, for me, it always ropes back around to, like, well, I'm not going to give up because I freaking live here. Where am I going to go?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm not good for much else, you know?
Yeah, like, what am I going to do? Go back home?
Yeah.
To wherever I'm from? I'm from here.
This is where you live, dude.
So if I go back home, I literally go walk right back in the house because this is the house I grew up in, right?
Yeah.
So what am I going to do? Just start telling people I quit?
Yeah.
Like, so no, that's not so, but.
Right.
So where are you at with this whole thing, man? Like, are you in it for the freaking long haul to see it through? Or what are your beliefs on, like, you know, because, like, at some point, I just got to ask people, like, you know, that did make it, like, what helped you stick through the tough times, you know?
Yeah, man, that's a good question. I think that it does take a certain amount of like eternal optimism to continue in a creative endeavor like songwriting and performing. But I mean, I'd be lying if I said that I didn't like think about quitting like once a week at least. You know, I mean, just because I mean it gets hard. You know, you get to the point where the gigs have dried up for a minute and people aren't responding to emails and you feel like you can't win for losing, and it gets frustrating for sure. I heard a couple of wise words in my, you know, over the years that have really helped me. One guy told me, he's a gospel singer-songwriter named Chuck Day. He wrote this great old song called The Midnight Cry that a lot of y'all might know, that's a big Southern gospel standard. And he told me one time, you know, the people that succeed are just the people that didn't quit when they should have, you know? And it just rang really true to me, because it definitely feels like logically sometimes it's like, dude, you need to hang it up. You know, like you can make more money working at, you know, the drive through, you know, a lot of times.
That's a shoot, people.
You know,
that's a shoot. Oh, that's, yeah. That's legit. I mean,
and so, you know,
yeah.
So logically speaking, it's like, yeah, you probably should, but I think most great artists came to a point where they probably should have quit and didn't. Pretty much anybody that I respect as a performer or songwriter has a really similar story. I mean, even Garth Brooks got told by record labels in Nashville he needed to go home. And he did for a little bit, and then he came back and became one of the top-selling performers of all time.
Ever.
And it's, I mean, same with George Strait. He basically sent him packing from Nashville. He went back to Texas, and his wife kind of convinced him to try again, as I understand. And he has more number one singles than any artist in history.
Wow.
Yeah, the second was Conway Twitty for a while. But now, yeah, it's George Strait. He's got 60 or something like that. But even guys that are on the smaller scale of stories like this, where it just takes a lot of clawing from the bottom. I heard Ray Wiley Hubbard one time. He's this great Texas songwriter. He said one time he was doing a show, and he kind of went into this story about basically somebody told him that he thought it was just really, really inspirational how he had remained so committed to his craft over 30, you know, some odd years and all this. And he said, you know what I told him was, the best way to stay committed to music is don't learn how to do anything else. And sometimes I feel like that's where I'm at. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's like I've been playing music for so long, I don't even remember when I started, really. You know, like, I got a guitar when I was 7, and I've been playing music, like, pretty much ever since. And I never really thought I would ever do anything else but that. Like, even when I was in middle school and high school, and they're doing all this college prep stuff, like, you know, be thinking about your major and all this stuff, I was like, I don't think I'm going to go. Right. I think I'm gonna write songs. I'm going to move to Nashville. And right as I got out of high school, I did come to Nashville. I didn't end up moving then, but I mean, I've known that this is what I was gonna, you know, throw the Hail Mary at one way or another for a long time. And so maybe I shot myself in the foot, but maybe that's what it takes to succeed in a business like this, is to shoot yourself in the foot a little bit. It's like, yeah, I mean, I can do like general labor construction and like make a cup of coffee and, you know, this kind of stuff, but you know, the most I'm like, my earning potential doesn't really exceed more than $15 an hour at this stage in my life.
Right,
unless I'm playing music, then I can get paid hundreds of dollars to play for an hour sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, on a good day. A lot of times it's a lot less than that, but you know, I think that's the candid truth of the whole thing.
Yeah.
At least from my perspective.
Well, it's, you know, honestly, one thing that's good about this podcast for me is just hearing other people's stories that are in similar positions, you know?
Yeah.
And for sure, like, I don't know. We're not here to bury the industry or to woe is me our stories or anything.
No.
But, you know, we are here to just talk about how it is.
Well, and it's...
And telling you that we are trying to stick it through.
We're living in, like, in a time period that everybody presents their best self to the public. You know, we live in a time of Instagram bloggers and, you know, people that do this aspirational, you know, look at how cool my life is and how great everything is, and they make their living from wearing somebody's t-shirt and having their picture made.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard, especially, you know, for those of us that live in Nashville and we see this kind of stuff, like people are able to spin everything into a career, it seems like.
Yeah.
Whether it's making, you know, some weird handcrafted item for something or some weird trendy Instagram thing that I totally don't understand, mm-hmm. but totally works. You know, the market being, you know, the world being the way that it is, sometimes it's good to remind ourselves that, like, that's not reality for a lot of people, and don't feel like your life sucks because it doesn't look like a perfectly photoshopped, mm-hmm. you know, Nashville look on Instagram or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
You know, because that kind of stuff is a lot of times bullcrap. Like, you know, we're presenting stuff because we want people to like it. That's why that stuff looks so intriguing and perfect all the time. So that's something that I remind myself, like, daily is, you know, because getting on the internet can just really throw me down a pit of despair so quickly. Yep. And you just have to remind yourself that, you know, I know it's cliche, but, like, that stuff's not real. A lot of it's not, and you can't compare, you know, your journey in life to what everybody else is choosing to present of themselves online. And it seems like that would be a fairly cliche, obvious thing, but I have to continue to remind myself that, you know, there's more to life than likes, you know?
There is, man. That's a great line right there, man. Well, brother, I appreciate you coming on here and telling your story again, this part of it, and it was a really fun to watch, you know, watch that whole thing grow down, and I'll say it again. I think it's just a matter of time for you. Just,
well, I appreciate
for one
that.
Guy to another, just be encouraged, stay in the game. You know what I mean? Because, like, it's not for lack of the it factor or talent or any of that stuff. It just hasn't happened yet. You know, and if you stay in the game and you show up every day to work hard and get better and whatever, and keep being you and staying true to yourself, like, I who knows where you'll be 5 years from now.
Yeah, it's just I think it's that is keeping a positive attitude as much as humanly possible, mm-hmm. and outwork everybody else in the room. You know, that's been my mantra is, you know, my dad used to tell me when I was young that, because my dad is a musician too, and he would say, when he was in classical music, and he would say, there's always going to be somebody better than you, and you're going to be always better than somebody,
mm-hmm.
but there's always somebody better than you, and all you can do is work harder than everybody. Like, that's the one thing that you can control. Like, you have some God-given talent, but it's up to you to refine that and just completely work your rear end off. So I think that's the mantra, is just work harder than everybody if you can.
Yeah, that's true, man. So, and even so, you know, we'll do the best we can, and still it's kind of like, you know, Lord's will be done, and we'll go from there, and who knows what's next on down the road.
You know,
we're not saying that anything's guaranteed. That's not what I'm trying to preach here. You know what I mean? Like, success isn't guaranteed, you know, but you do your best and you have the best shot, you know, if that be what's going to go down. So, but that's how I feel about it anyway. Yeah. And again, I can't thank you enough for coming on here and telling your story.
Oh, man, my pleasure. It was fun.
Yeah, dude, it's always good to catch up with you. And, man, I look forward to what's yet to come.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Well, we'll sign off from here. We'll try to put out an episode every week for the next few weeks and see what we can do for you. I got some good stuff lined up in the working, so hang with me on this craziness. But for now, for Taylor Alexander, my name's Taylor Jones. We'll see y'all next time.